Now, welcome your host, the celebrity consultant, Valerie Denise Jones.
All right, so what I want to do, because I am going to play a cute little game. It's not a game because it is all real. Very, very sad, some of it. But I'm going to play a few audio clips and then have our first guest, Maj Touré, who was with us last week. I am going to have him respond, and then we are going to toss it over and allow the last few minutes Maj Touré has to spend with us. I want both he and Officer Stan to talk about Amir Locke. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. But anyway, here's a little bit about today's guest. And I'm going to cut it short, so forgive me in advance for the abrupt interruption.
Anyway, we got Maj Touré here, and he's been on the ground, in the movement, talking with folks, teaching them firearms. What is the speech is going to be about today to the conservative movement, though?
Well, we have to make sure that we're recognizing that urban America, particularly black America, that does not mean, you know, excluding other Americans.
Right.
This is a demographic that's been targeted by leftist media, by the left in general, to make sure that they're outside of their Second Amendment rights. We have the highest levels of gun violence, mm-hmm. in association with the highest levels of disrespect for the Second Amendment. So the conservative movement has to make sure that we're informing and shifting culture as opposed to just down-talking in that demographic. Yeah. So we're going to talk about some of the solutions in that way.
You know, it's interesting because my speech is going to be about the crime issue. Mm. And one of the things that I've noticed is that people cannot defend themselves in these communities because of the laws that are currently in place.
Right.
And so Joe Biden's response was, of course, to talk about the guns as if the guns are just shooting themselves.
Right.
What is your solution to that?
Well, one is to expose how all gun control is racist.
Yeah.
And I don't say that from like this fake woke, you know, catchphrase type of thing. I mean, legitimately, this is a thing that was designed to stop black people from having the means to defend themselves. And by exposing that, we basically see how racist Joe Biden is and has been for 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen the pictures of him with the Grand Wizard from the KKK.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the staunch proponents of the Democratic, you know, angle has been gun control. So by exposing that in these demographics, we not only expose that and remove, you know, and shift voting trends, but we also create more of a unity and a healing around something that we all fundamentally believe in, the right of us all to defend our life. So exposure and then solutions deal with us all healing as a nation, as opposed to just telling people in certain communities, well, you know, you're cool with the killers because
right.
you live in a rough neighborhood.
So you know, I get this question from my viewers all the time. How is Maj Touré?
All right, so I'm going to stop it right there because he's with us, guys. Mr. The Guns Are Racist himself.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Valerie.
That's right. Hey, yeah. hey, what's up? How are you feeling?
I'm wonderful. It's 60 degrees here in Philadelphia. We have some unseasonably warm temperatures, so I'm outside doing some work to take advantage of that warmth.
Amen, amen. All right, so you know we always kick it off with your promotions. We heard the audio. Any updates, anything that we need to fill in the blanks before I play my first audio?
You know, everybody, thank you that has been supporting. Again, we're shifting off of GoFundMe because of their some practices that they're supporting that we are not in agreement with. So we're taking our crowdfunded funding source from off of GoFundMe to give Send Go pretty shortly. But in between, if you want to support our work of arming and educating urban America about safe and responsible firearms ownership, conflict resolution, their Second Amendment and human rights, just go get some merch, blackgunsmattershop.com. Grab a shirt, grab a, you know, a hoodie or something like that. And just, you know, just be a walking representation of what safe and responsible gun ownership means.
Appreciate that. Gratitude. All right. So I want to play an audio clip, get your response. Several of it, my memory serves me correctly, you've kind of touched on it. And guys, those The Answers, the expanded version, is on his YouTube page, so please make sure to visit it. Just simply Google his name, and all of pretty much everything he's been on will come up, all right? So I am going to start with this because last we spoke, we graced the surface talking about suicide and warning signs, okay? So I'm going to play this, and when we come back, we'll talk.
There is a search for answers today in the shocking death of former Miss USA Chesley Crist. She was only 30 years old. The end came for Chesley here at this 60-story luxury high-rise in Midtown Manhattan. Reports say Crist was last seen alive on the 29th floor terrace alone, and it is believed she jumped to her death. Authorities say she left behind a note, leaving everything to her mother. North Carolina. Chesley was crowned Miss USA in 2019, dazzling the nation with her beauty as well as brains. She has a law degree from Wake Forest. Moments after she won, she spoke to Inside Edition.
I'm so excited. It's really surreal. I still can't believe it happened.
Chesley's victory made pageant history. For the first time, three black women held the titles of Miss USA, Miss Teen USA, and Miss America in the same year.
It's really exciting. I can't believe it. I think it would be exciting as an onlooker, but it's even more thrilling to actually be one-third of that sort of trifecta.
In a haunting last Instagram posted the morning of her death, she wrote, "May this day bring you rest and peace," with a heart emoji. Gail King choked up with emotion this morning.
Nobody saw this coming, and this is what's so upsetting to me. How do you know to offer someone help if you don't know they need the help? That's why this is hitting me so hard.
She was friends with current Miss USA, Elle Smith.
How shocking was this for you?
It's shocking, not only because of the way in which she died, but it's because she was such a light that you would have never expected this to happen.
No motive for the suicide was known, but in a 2018 interview, she spoke about mental health.
I do a lot to make sure that I maintain my mental health, and the most important thing that I did is talk to a counselor.
Her heartbroken family released this statement. Her great light was one that inspired others around the world with her beauty and strength. Chesley embodied love and served others. A promising young life gone too soon.
All right, so we're going to stop it there. Again, last we spoke, we grazed the surface talking about suicide, mental health, and I just wanted to know your opinion because I realized a previous conversation that a lot of people are literally living with high-functioning depression. That's the, I guess, the clinical term. So I just wanted to get your take since we kind of just touched on it last week.
Yeah, it's a very serious topic, obviously. And you know, it's unfortunate that so many anti-gun or anti-freedom and anti-human rights organizations and people play games with that serious topic. So you have something serious as suicide, and they'll try to, and even though upwards 60 to upwards of 70% of deaths, you know, are suicides in relation to firearms. So when they say there's 30,000, however many people that die per year from firearms-related deaths, they're counting that 60 to 70% of people that take their own lives. And I think that's not only, you know, wrong. I think it's really not serving the people and family members that, you know, are impacted by these suicides. This isn't just a talking point. And so that's the first thing. I think that most people aren't even aware that many people are actually dying by suicides in relation to the conversation of, you know, firearms and gun ownership. I think that the general public thinks that, you know, there's actually 30,000 people dying just from shooting each other, or bad guys shooting like horrible people, you know, or good people. So I think that's the first step. The other thing is, by having a quantifiable number that we can actually say, this is the amount of people, or this percentage of people actually commit suicide using a firearm annually, we can start to beat that number back because, okay, the reason why they're using this firearm is because of the fact that firearms work. It's a tool that's effective, and unfortunately, this tremendous amount of people, most, a lot of them young people, don't feel whole. You know, there's depression. You know, as we've seen over the last year and a half to 2 years now, we have 2 years of suicides being on the rise because of employment being removed, government, you know, overreach, stopping jobs, so forth and so on. So we can see a dramatic improvement in cutting down in some of these deaths if we focus on a problem from a legitimate standpoint and not just saying, oh, this is just because guns are doing it. The people that are impacted by this are impacted for several reasons, some of them being the mental issues that they're dealing with and some of the stresses that go along with not having employment, not made to be feel, you know, to be felt whole. And so we have to look at that from that perspective. Some of it is, you know, a lot of it is psychotropic drugs and having that conversation about, you know, the pharmaceutical industry and their products. So these are all things that we can actually utilize to help us in cutting down on some of these deaths, as opposed to using it as like a game or my team is right and your team is wrong. This is not anything to play with. This is something serious that we can collectively work together to solve.
Thank you. Her last words, per the recording, may this day bring you rest and peace. And as Gail King reiterated, we don't always know the signs. We don't know what to look for. Now, you just, I won't say haphazardly, just for lack of a better word, so forgive me, because it's, I mean it, but I don't. But you said to contact, you instructed our listening audience to contact you if you were thinking, contemplating, dealing with, you know, the effects of suicide, et cetera, et cetera. What led you to say that?
Because I've had people, I know people. One of my good friends, Baraka James, from the Second Amendment community, very good man, was battling for years, and I was unaware of what, you know, struggles he was dealing with. Last year, he took his life. He was going through a divorce. You know, there was a lot going on, and there's more, obviously, to meet the eye in than most situations. But, you know, he literally, you know, went in the basement, set himself on fire, and or the area around him, and put a rifle in his mouth and took his life. Now, this is one of the most positive, upbeat, you know, he would call me, talk about very, you know, life-altering. We would have these great conversations, you know, and he took his life. Similar to a, you know, how Robin Williams was just a beam of light for everyone else, making everyone else feel great, but a lot of us silently struggle. And so these types of issues aren't just talking points. These types of issues are, you know, these are people. These are my friends. These are family members that we have to make sure that we're, you know, looking into and looking out for. We tend to ignore that because we have such, you know, especially gun owners, you know, they're such strong men, such strong women, so forth and so on. But everybody's fighting a silent battle that you may not even be aware of. And so making sure that those signs are important, and that's the reason, making sure that those signs that are important and making sure that we're addressing them as such is very important. So when I said that in the last time we spoke, you know, if you're going through something, shoot me an email, you know, listen, that, and I stand on that. Shoot me an email. I'd rather talk about what you're going on in your life than, you know, hear your story, you know, on the news or so forth and so on. That I know that we've always been, all of us have been at some point or another with varying degree, been in a space where we've thought, I don't know how I'm going to make it through this scenario. Some people use faith. Some people have sheer will. Some people just, you know, put their nose down to the grindstone. But we have been conditioned as someone who also deals with, you know, issues, you know, me raised in poverty, that's not normal. It's not okay. We have been conditioned, especially men, to not address those things, to, you know, you just got to tough it up. And I find myself repeating that theory a lot. Now, I'm not suicidal, but I know that there's room for growth and development. So someone that may be a fan, that may be listening to the show, that may be a supporter, you know, that may think that no one's going to listen to them, if they're hearing this at this particular moment, they could have been anywhere else in the universe, but they happen to be right here right now, I think it's important to reach out. I think more Second Amendment activists, advocates, whatever they call themselves, they have to make this their issue. You can't say that 60% of suicides are done with firearms, and then the firearms and Second Amendment community
not do enough to reach out to people. This isn't about fame. This isn't about what podcast you can be on. This isn't about, you know, who has the coolest gun. Those things are all great, and it's not a diss to that. But the reality is, this is about using our tools, our voices to defend life. So that's why, you know, brought that up on the last time we talked. But I also want to reiterate and stand on that again. If you are going through something right now, if you're hearing this right now, yes, I'm talking to you. Email me. Send me your phone number. I do not care what time of day it is. I will call you. We can communicate about life, and we can work on assisting you in getting the type of help or just the ear that you may need at that moment.
Appreciate that. I want to switch gears. You know, we afford our audience a cornucopia of topics, so thank you so much for that. Going to switch. Just want to know how you feel about this scenario. Play this audio, and when we come back, we'll talk.
More fallout today for embattled Joe Rogan following his apology for repeatedly using the N-word years ago.
My sincere and humble apologies. I wish there was more that I could say, but all of this is just me talking from the bottom of my heart. It makes me sick watching that video.
The troubling video sparking the uproar went viral over the weekend, and we should warn you, it's difficult to watch.
You know,
yes. Saying the word.
Today, Spotify condemned Rogan's language, but said it would not remove his popular podcast from its streaming service. At the same time, Rogan has agreed to delete an additional 70 episodes of the Joe Rogan Experience. I do not believe that silencing Joe is the answer, writes Spotify CEO. We should have clear lines around content and take action when they are crossed. But canceling voices is a slippery slope. 7 days ago, The Rock expressed support for Rogan over allegations that he was spreading disinformation about COVID-19. But in the wake of the N-word controversy, he is now saying, "I was not aware of his N-word use. Learning moment for me." Image consultant Mike Paul says Rogan's apology may not be enough to save his brand.
If Joe Rogan is getting best counsel right now, today, on this issue, it will include how many people and how many brands and how many shows have gotten away with using the N-word in history. I can assure you, not many.
Fox Business Network anchor Liz Claman.
Spotify is in a very difficult position. It's between a rock and a hard place. I mean, they've got this podcast star for whom they paid $100 million reportedly to sign this deal. And why did they see Joe Rogan as so valuable? Because he's outspoken and controversial. But it's kind of a double-edged sword here.
All right, so that's that. Again, yes, very slippery slope. And last week we talked about Whoopi Goldberg and this cancel culture. So it's a very difficult conversation to have. I have, to my knowledge, I don't know anybody who's been canceled because they used the N-word. But other words, I know that they have been canceled because they discuss certain things regarding other races. What is your position as it relates to all things Joe Rogan?
One, Joe Rogan was wrong. Like, we got to lead in with that. I have a piece of content on our YouTube channel, and the title of the video is Why Joe Rogan is Wrong. I want to start backwards because two things can be true at once. One, I say this all the time in all of my interviews, and sometimes I think maybe I shouldn't say it because some people don't know. I used to rob people, and in robbing those people, it was wrong. My justification was, well, they stay in the game. You know, they're selling drugs. It's okay. And it's not okay because selling drugs is actually very difficult. And the only reason why it's unlawful is because the government said so. But I justified that, and I robbed people. Now, I am a reformed person. I can acknowledge that the things that I was doing was wrong, and I made a difference. The difference now is I kind of like diffused the bomb by telling people about my past when I didn't think that my past would go beyond, I don't know, a city or half a city block radius, right? So at that time when you're doing things, you're doing what you actually want to do because that's what you think. That's your demographic. I think Joe Rogan at that time especially was speaking to a bunch of frat type of douchebag white dudes that would make crude jokes. At that time, there was not many black people or black people that had solid history, knowledge of self, cultural understanding, financial positioning. Those people weren't listening to Joe Rogan at that time. So he was loose with the N-word. And I get the context of why it was there and what he said it for. But when you say it a bunch of times and hit me with that hard ER, I really can't rock with you. I might give you the comedic license and or the context license once or twice. And again, I think that when you get cavalier with it and you make jokes about it, you're setting yourself up, but at that time you don't see that your platform will be a juggernaut at a different point. That's the scenario that Joe Rogan finds himself in. Now, here's the other thing that's also true. I'm not with canceling anybody. I don't care. The free market will decide. If enough people say, yo, we do not want to watch Joe Rogan for this reason, there will be no need for these loud claims and calls of boycott. Just the market will decide. We don't like Maj going up there saying that all gun control is racist. We're not going to buy his shirts. We're not going to watch his YouTube videos. We're not going to go to any venues that he's at. Everyone has the freedom to do that. This overarching thing of proving that someone's views, speech, position is somehow worthy of putting energy into and not just promoting the thing that you like that we're calling cancel culture is the thing that I'm not with. I think it's very cowardly. I find solace, like one of my great heroes, Dr. Marcus Mosiah Garvey. I find solace in the fact that I want my racist and my bigotry and my bias right up front, just like, Marcus Garvey did when he had that meeting with the Ku Klux Klan, you know? And so I'm pretty sure nobody would think, you know, the honorable Marcus Garvey was tap dancing for white folks. So saying this all to say, I like my racism and my bigotry right up front. I think us as black people, when we're talking more specifically about black people, I think we had more going on when racism was very clear. I think right now the white liberal has made a very good living and job of tricking black people to think that they're actually our friends, and they are not. So, and Joe Rogan is a leftist. He is a liberal. And people think that, like, he's some right-wing dude. No, I've clipped, edited, and put together videos of him backing Bernie Sanders, saying he likes Tulsi Gabbard, you know, wanting free education. Those are more left ideologies, and some I actually agree with. However, he's not a hardcore right-leaning dude. He's a liberal. He's a liberal. So I think there was comedic license, and I give that. I think there was some bigotry because you didn't expect your platform to grow to the extent that it has. And I think that you're getting what, you know, if somebody comes out from 10, 15 years ago that I robbed and they're upset with me because I took their drugs and their money, I'm going to have to deal with that. And that's just the reality of the situation. And so that's what he's going through right now. Now, here's the third thing that's also true. On top of all of those things that are true, there is a concentrated effort to get that platform gone. And that's just the reality. We have to accept those three things as truth. Okay. One of those realities is, hey, we don't like a person having 11 million views per day that does not play by our rules and that we cannot control. That is a thing. You know, when you have organizations like Midas Touch Media working with Patriot Takes, which is a super PAC, to hire them to slander a platform, right, because of the ivermectin conversation, because of the, you know, giving a platform to more right-leaning speakers or things like that as well, we're looking at a highly political and organized attack on the platform. I think the trick is to highlight all of these, you know, N-word usage that has happened and has been on the internet for years, right? I think what's happening now is they want to try to discredit the messenger so no one will be able to hear messages. And so all three of those things are true. One, he played himself because he didn't anticipate this, and there is comedic license. Two, I'm not a fan of cancel culture. Let the free market decide. And three, there is a concentrated and concerted effort to attempt to remove this platform from Spotify because of the reach. So if he said, hey, we're going to pack up after our deal with Spotify is done, or Spotify says, hey, we're going to pay you, but we want to remove you from the platform, all he'd do is move over to Rumble or another platform. And then the cancel culture people that can't stand and be strong enough to articulate against what he's saying, or not even him, the people that he has on, they would then go to Rumble and say, we're going to pressure you to try to remove Joe Rogan. It would be the same thing. You give these people an inch, they'll try to take a mile. So all of those things are true in that sense, and I think people need to look at that from a well-balanced and layered and contextual perspective, you know. And it doesn't have to be one or the other. All three of those things can be true.
Thank you for that. I'm going to have to, if you don't mind, give me a yes, because I want to steal that from you, comedic license. I love that. I'm over here taking notes, so forgive me, but yeah, I got to add that to my lexicon. So I appreciate you so much for the introduction. Speaking of introductions, I forgot last week to give a shout out to Mo Duncan. Mo Duncan, thank you so much for working so hard behind the scenes and for making sure that we got Maj to raise attention again. So appreciate you so much for that, fam. All right, so we're going to switch gears, go to something a little more serious. I know you are out of time, so I'm going to be brief, but I did invite Officer Stan Mason to take over from this point because he's more well-versed than I am. So if you could spare just a few more moments as we wait for Judge Shobrown, not sure what time he's calling in. He sent a text saying he's running late, but want to play this, and when we come back, I will give you and Officer Stan your last a few moments to talk, and then get your final takeaway. Okay? Here we go.
Now to new details on that no-knock raid in Minneapolis where police shot and killed Amir Locke, who was not named in the warrant. Police now saying they arrested a suspect in connection with that homicide investigation as calls grow for a ban on no-knock raids. Alex Perez is there in Minneapolis for us. Good morning, Alex.
Hey, good morning, Robin. That suspect was Amir Locke's cousin who was wanted for murder. Police thought he was in the apartment, but he wasn't.
This morning, a clearer picture emerging about the events leading up to the deadly police shooting of 22-year-old Amir Locke. Court documents revealing authorities were looking for Locke's 17-year-old cousin, who was wanted in connection to a January homicide in St. Paul. Police serving search warrants for three different apartments looking for the suspect, including last Wednesday when a Minneapolis Police Department SWAT team carried out that no-knock warrant. But it was Amir Locke, who family members say was staying with relatives, that was captured on police body camera video, appearing to have been startled awake. Police say he was holding a gun pointed in the officer's direction when he was shot, just 9 seconds after they entered the apartment. Locke's heartbroken family says he legally purchased the gun, and they believe he was confused by the commotion.
He didn't even have an opportunity to see who decided to play God and take his life.
Locke was not listed on the warrant and was not a target of the investigation. His cousin, who was not found in the apartment, was arrested on Sunday. According to the statement of probable cause, officers executed a warrant at that location because Locke's cousin often stayed there, and records show police had been called to the apartment 10 times in the last 7 months.
And that 17-year-old cousin has been charged with 2 counts of second-degree murder. He's due in court on Tuesday. The officer who shot Amir Locke remains on paid administrative leave.
Well, hey there, GMA fans. Robin Roberts here. Thanks for checking out.
All right, I think that was dated 2 days ago, so forgive me if you have anything more current, but that was the shortest version I could scout before the show. So before I open up Officer Sands' mic, Maj, did you want to speak to anything that was featured in the audio?
Yeah, I think that is very important to acknowledge that training is going to be a serious conversation that comes out of this. The law enforcement training, how much training that officer had. The incompetence, again, like they said, they went to three different apartments to knock on doors to look for someone. That's lazy police work. If you don't know that the person's there, why are you going in there? A good police officer goes, we know where this actual target is. We've done our homework. We've done our due diligence. How you can get a no-knock warrant for three different domiciles is just very interesting to me in that regard. Now, do I think that it was
let me go in and kill black people? No, I don't think it was that. But it doesn't matter. You know, a 22-year-old young man is now dead. And the reality is he had every right to have a firearm to defend his life. You kick in somebody's door where you're not supposed to be. You don't know if you're going to the right house, as evidenced in going to three different places looking for one person. And the suspect is wanted for murder. You should be more on your due diligence in that regard. So that's kind of the early, and I did a video on that. That's on our YouTube channel as well, youtube.com/Black Guns Matter. It's called Who's Responsible for Killing, you know, the Murder of Amir Locke. And rest in peace to him. Much love, energy, and positive vibes to his family. But I know that the city is responsible, the state is responsible for this, and state meaning the government. And you know, his family needs to be made as whole as they possibly can with losing a loved one. So that's my take on it. I actually got to get out of here real quick, but thank you all for having me again. You know, I hope everyone is having a great day. Thinking about, you know, if you got mental health issues, please, please, please email solutionarylifestyle@gmail.com. Look at organizations like Walk the Talk America, which does great work in mental health and gun owners and bridging that gap a bit. And, you know, today, y'all, just be kind to each other. Just be kind to each other. And if you want to support our work, blackgunsmattershop.com.
I appreciate you so much. Thank you. I hope you have a great rest of the day, and we shall talk soon, okay?
Thank you.
I hope you're enjoying this big exclusive via the Judge Joe Brown Show. Don't forget to subscribe to this channel. Now, back to the show.
This show is sponsored by the Hurricane Reports, merchandise, and more.